is White Sox Weekly, your two-hour all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Drive in the air, deep to right, it is gone!
This is a presentation of the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon, and I am not Connor McKnight. I am Jeff Meller. Connor McKnight is getting set to call today's game, today's action between the Chicago White Sox and the Baltimore Orioles from Guaranteed Rate Field alongside Darren Jackson. So don't worry, though, never fear. I was able to get confirmation from Connor McKnight that he will still join us here on White Sox Weekly. He's going to hop on in about 15 minutes, take a little bit of time away from his pregame prep to join you, the White Sox fan, to hear from him. And don't worry, we'll keep it rolling the traditional White Sox Weekly way right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Again, I'm Jeff Meller. I'll be here for the next 2 hours, and then we'll bring pregame your way. We've got a White Sox-Orioles game two of a three-game set today. Tough one last night. The White Sox go down 6-3. I do have to say, a little bit disappointing. It was one of the rougher losses because they were what felt like in command, 3-0 heading into the seventh inning. And I thought Ronaldo Lopez did a great job executing some pitches to get out of what should have been, or what should have been, getting out of a jam. Unfortunately, he sawed off the Orioles hitter Elvis Andrews, was not able to come up with the play, and unfortunately Ronaldo Lopez then left a ball right over the heart of the plate, and Adley Rutschman showed why he is one of the bright young stars in this ball game. But you know what? It is a great day to get back to the winning ways here, and I have to tell you, it is absolutely perfect. It is perfection for baseball today. I can't believe on a April day we have this type of weather. So if you are just kind of looking around on a Saturday afternoon with nothing on your agenda, I would highly encourage you to come on out to the ballpark here at Guaranteed Rate, because I'm telling you right now, I'm sitting here in the booth with Brendan Riley and just watching it, soaking it in. The sun is out. It is scheduled to be 80 degrees today, so it's going to be a fabulous afternoon. So come out and enjoy some White Sox baseball here at Guaranteed Rate Field. All right, so to get into the nuts and bolts, though, as I mentioned, the White Sox go down 6-3 yesterday, their third loss in a row, and it was a very difficult loss. But the bright spot, Mike Clevinger, now he walked 5 hitters, but he was able to navigate it, and he was able to sidestep those walks and actually pitched 6 shutout innings. Now, it was aided by a fabulous play by Andrew Benintendi in left field, really showing why the White Sox spent the money on him, that gold glove caliber defense, which I'll let you hear later in the show here on White Sox Weekly. But Mike Clevinger did a really nice job, and in the post game, he talked about the White Sox right now scuffling along, but he's still got some optimism.
So I don't want to sit there and say we just beat ourselves, but it feels like almost every game we've kind of, you know, beat ourselves. So, I mean, if you want to look at a silver lining, I mean, there's so many. I mean, we could have a lot of wins right now. So, I mean, it's just, again, finding our identity, which we're in the process of, and then, you know, figuring out how to mold those pieces together. It seems like one day one thing's doing well, something's off. So, I mean, it's just time. It just takes a little time, especially with new faces, new clubhouse. It takes time.
And there you go. Mike Clevinger yesterday, again, 6 shutout innings, only gave up 1 hit and was able to scatter around 5 walks. And obviously, that's not exactly what you want to do, but he did elaborate where he thought a couple of those walks were just some really good at-bats by the Baltimore Orioles hitters. And as we're seeing, the Orioles, they have a lot of really good young talent, especially on the hitting side. So they are going to be an up-and-coming lineup that teams have to deal with going forward, and I think the White Sox are getting a little bit of a taste of it. But again, encouraged by Mike Clevinger giving you 6 shutout innings, he really has been a nice revelation and somebody the White Sox have been able to count on here in the early going. And if he is rekindling those days in Cleveland where he was, you know, a close to Cy Young caliber pitcher, I mean, that is something that I know the White Sox, you know, in their, you want to dream and say, okay, what are you getting from Mike Clevinger when you sign him to a 1-year deal? The best case scenario is, yeah, maybe he gets back to those ways in Cleveland. And early on, he has looked really good for the White Sox pitching staff, which has been a really nice find. Now, Rick Hahn did meet the media yesterday before the game began, And, you know, they head into that game yesterday at 5-8. Of course, they fall and go to 5-9. But he was asked specifically, all right, so where are you at right now? You're below 500. How are you feeling about your White Sox team right now?
It's really dangerous to take broad conclusions from one game or three games at any stretch of the year, whether it's in April when things tend to get magnified or, you know, even mid-June. Like, any three-game stretch, frankly, even any 13-game stretch is not necessarily indicative of the other 159 or 149 games, whatever math is there. Good on my feet, right? That's it. Every team wants to get off to a good start. We're disappointed in how the start has gone thus far. There's been times where the starting pitching was probably the culprit for keeping us out of games. There's been times when it's been the bullpen. Both of those two certainly stepped up over the week in Minnesota. So it's just really a matter of getting each element clicking at the same time. I think the simpler way of explaining it is we know we have something to prove and we know we have to prove it ahead.
And I think that's some sage advice there from a guy who's been around and seen a lot of baseball. It just feels bigger in April because you don't have the long resume to look at throughout the season. And, you know, certainly you don't want to start 5-9, but the reality is, you know, it's just a blip when you look at the grand scheme of things. And I think there's some things to be positive about. The White Sox have, of course, dealt with some injuries, and that's not unexpected at this time of year, as you have guys coming out of spring training, kind of, you know, getting their legs, figuring things out and seeing, you know, getting back into the baseball routine of things. And the White Sox are not the only team that's been hit by injuries, but as we've seen, they've been hit by, you know, significant players. Tim Anderson, of course, right now on the injured list. Eloy just coming back yesterday and actually delivering an RBI single. Funnily enough, Eli hits two rockets in his first two at-bats, and they both end up being outs. And then the bloop hit broken bat, where he just gets he just reaches out and gets the bat on the ball, ends up being the RBI single. So that baseball, it's just quirky that way. But in addition to that, you know, the White Sox have Yoan Moncada also was put on the injured list yesterday before the game. So they're dealing with some big injuries to the core of the lineup there, and not to mention also Liam Hendricks, who just adds so much stability to the back end of the bullpen. You put Liam Hendricks in that closing slot, and of course, everybody else kind of just gets to fall in line in that nice little pecking order. So the White Sox are dealing with a rash of injuries, and again, that's not to be unexpected this time of year, and hopefully they can get through it just a little bit. But that is the case. That is the reality of where they're at right now. Rick Hahn did address some of the injury concerns for the White Sox.
Am I going to let 13 days dictate our feelings on the changes we've made? Absolutely not. The level of preparation, analysis, professionalism, everything that has gone into player performance has been impressive and remains strong. I sat here, I think it was your fault, actually, at the last time we sat here together when we wanted, not to get, when we wanted to talk
one
about, check your comments, it'll be one of you, when we were talking about player health and availability and how great of a start we had and how great it is to have that core together. And I think you might have, to your credit, even said, I don't want to tempt the baseball guys, which you did. So that was a week ago, right? Maybe 10 days ago when we had that conversation. So we didn't go from, like, doing a really great job keeping everyone healthy into horse in 10 days. Like, it's a larger process. And as I said that day, unfortunately, I think I was right by like 5 hours. I said, somebody is going to pull a hamstring at some point. This is professional sports. This happens. If you look around the game, there are guys getting hurt left and right just from normal course of competing this much early in the season. March and April tend to be the cruelest months when it comes to injuries as you ramp guys up. Again, we want to do better. We're far, far, far from satisfied, but are we confident that we're doing the right thing? We're on the right path? Yes.
pragmatic approach there from White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, kind of laying out the reality of the situation. And, of course, the White Sox would like to have better results. But right now, again, there's still things to be optimistic about, including Jake Berger filling in here and delivering yet again another home run last night. He's been, you know, the bat's never been in question. It's really just about creating opportunities for him. And, you know, whether maybe it's injuries that he needs to get in the lineup a little bit more. But good to see him taking advantage of the opportunities when presented as well. So especially considering his draft pedigree, somebody who was selected as a first rounder. And, you know, it's a nice problem to have where you have, you know, so many bats where you don't need to just plug Jake Berger in right away, but would really be interested to see him with an opportunity to, you know, get a full complement of 500 plus plate appearances, you know. And I don't know if that's going to be in store for him this year. Obviously, if that is the case, you know, there would probably be an injury along the way. But weird things happen in baseball. You're not going to go through an entire season without suffering some injuries. That's just the reality of the game. And so it's nice to see some of the depth pieces on the White Sox roster come in and show that they're capable of, you know, more than just being replacement level players. So that's something I'm encouraged to see. 312-332-3776. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight on White Sox Weekly here today. Don't worry, though, as I mentioned, Connor McKnight's going to join us here in just a few short minutes, and we'll pick his brain as he gets set to call today's 110 first pitch, the second game of a three-game set against the Orioles for the White Sox here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Hey, join us for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bring your family out to the ballpark for a day full of fun. Tickets start at just $10. Visit whitesox.com/Sunday to purchase your tickets today. And interestingly enough, tomorrow would be a great day because if you haven't noticed, Dylan Cease against Grayson Rodriguez is your pitching matchup tomorrow. So, tomorrow would be a fabulous way to take advantage of that Family Sunday opportunity, courtesy, again, of the White Sox at whitesox.com/Sunday to purchase your tickets. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller, in for the man you usually hear during this time slot, and that would be, of course, Connor McKnight, who is gracious enough, looking very peppy off of a very great, great night's sleep, no doubt.
So peppy, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. As I'm told, and I guess I should have known this going in, four-month-old babies don't sleep a lot, so sometimes they just keep everybody in the house up. But that's neither here nor there. We got a great day for baseball.
You would think they would be a little more aware of the baseball schedule. Four-month-old babies, that is.
I talked her through the whole, you know, 162 mm-hmm. games, 183 days. Mm-hmm. She even knows, you know, how much service time she needs to create a full year mm-hmm. of service time for that.
No suppression for her.
But could not remember when first pitch was today. It's just tough.
Well, we will sojourn on, right, and try and figure it out. A great broadcast later today. But all right, Connor, yesterday, my takeaway a little bit, last night was a little bit of a disappointing loss because it felt like the White Sox had that one in check. And unfortunately, things just got away from Ronaldo Lopez after Elvis Andrus can't make a play that, you know, it's a tough play, but it's one where you really kind of wish it would have been interesting to see how that game unfolds differently had Elvis Andrus been able to come up with it.
Yeah, very much a do-or-die play. I kind of thought the bat broke a little bit on that play as well, so perhaps it's not humming off that thing as quickly as Elvis would have liked to have. I mean, if that ball gets to him faster, he's probably got a better chance of making that play. You know, they played six innings of really good baseball.
Yes.
They played great defense in that sixth inning, that final inning before things kind of went off the rails in the seventh. And I guess that's kind of been, you know, you talk to guys around the clubhouse, it really kind of has been what this first 14 games have been like. Not all three legs of the tripod have been properly stood up at the same time enough. And that's why you've got the 5-9 record, right? Whether it's been the starting pitching that had its notable issues early on, the offense, which went a little quiet last day in Pittsburgh and then against the Minnesota Twins, or, you know, a bullpen that has had, you know, kind of intermittently an inability to lock things down. you know, you look at Ronaldo Lopez last night, and, you know, the thing I kind of mentioned on the postgame show, although he found the middle of the plate a couple of times and got hurt for it, the stuff looked right.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, at 100, it had some dance to it. The slider was good, though he wasn't locating it all that well and didn't get the swings and misses toward the bottom of the zone that we have seen him get. But, like, the under the hood yes. of Ronaldo Lopez all checked out last night, so I don't worry about him all that much in terms of last night's particular game.
The old school me allowed my mind to venture down the idea of the closer mentality,
yeah,
and wondering if Ronaldo Lopez has almost already gotten comfortable there, because he does seem like in the ninth when you need him to come in and shut things down, he's there. And again, he did a great job. He basically did his job, but again, it was a tough play, as you said, do or die. But I did allow myself to wonder, I wonder if this is the ninth inning, if Ronaldo Lopez, like, maybe is able to handle it just a little bit differently. Because, again, you said the stuff is there.
Yeah.
It's electric. He's the guy coming out of the bullpen you want. And, again, I understand it's a different, you know, high-leverage situation. That's the – it's and for the smart way of approaching it, it's a good way. But I just wondered, you know, would he have been a little more comfortable in the ninth?
You know, I it's interesting. The one thing or a thing that I noticed Pedro Grifol saying from the very moment spring training started for this ball club is that he's going to leverage this bullpen. That's the verbiage he kept using. We're going to leverage the pen. We're going to leverage the pen. And I would guess, and he's talked about it some, James Fegan had a good article about it, I want to say day before yesterday, something like that, in The Athletic, about how they've gone into camp and come out of camp really stressing that bullpen guys, Ronaldo Lopez, Kendall Graveman, Joe Kelly when healthy, you know, the high leverage dudes, they're going to get the toughest opportunities. And I, you know, as a baseball kind of nerd, especially when it comes to bullpen usage, I would prefer to not have a set closer, if all things were equal, right? Like, if you could just take the human element
yes.
out of the bullpen and just plug and play MLB The Show
yeah.
and just use your best matchup every single time. That's the most efficient way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Terry Francona's done it for a really long time. That's how Tony La Russa did it before that. And then he got into a little, you know, kind of seventh, eighth, and ninth guys, right? I think, though, the experiment, if there is one here, is kind of a fun thing to watch happen. Nobody in baseball has been told that they're going to be the guy of the moment like Ronaldo Lopez has been. Because in the background, Liam Hendricks may return soon.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows that if Liam's back, Liam's closing ball games, and everyone hopes he is, up to and including Ronaldo Lopez, right? We just
yep.
want to see him back and pitching. But that means that the mentality has to be different for him from scratch. And I wouldn't be surprised if next time he's dropped into a leverage spot, sixth, seventh, eighth, that there's better success. Because we've seen it before from Ronaldo. And I think this coaching staff, this pitching infrastructure, has really done a good job laying that road down for him.
And truth be told, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, too, because there's probably a lot of hitters where he actually, you know, may be able to get away with that, where it's just fouled off. But, you know, Adley Rutschman's not the guy you want to leave a ball over the plate to.
No, he is a bad man, Jeff. He is a very, you know, we talked, how many times have you, you know, kind of watched baseball over the last two, three decades almost, and you see the catcher come up, right? Whoever it is, right? And that catcher's 26, 27, took some time to cook in the minors, all that kind of thing. Adley Rutschman came into the league at 24, not only a fully formed catcher,
yep.
but a fully formed hitter. And that's really impressive. I mean, truly, truly impressive to go through the minor leagues as quickly as he did, playing that position, I mean, and make the impact he has. This Baltimore lineup's a fun one. You know, I like just about everybody in it, from Adley Rutschman to Ryan Mountcastle to Austin Hayes. I think it's a really fun offense. The White Sox have an opportunity here, though, to get to Kyle Gibson, results
yes.
so far this season aside. And you know, Tyler Wells pitched a good game last night, but the Sox held him, you know, they put three runs on him and just couldn't hold the rest of the offense in check.
Opposing Kyle Gibson will be Michael Kopech. And, of course, a big start for him. It seems like everyone out there nowadays seems to be a big start. And, of course, last time out he was good, but the White Sox were not able to give him some support. So what are you looking for from Michael Kopech today?
Well, something that really impressed me from his start against the Pirates. Remember, that's the bullpen. The bench is clearing, the bullpen emptying fracas, right?
Yes.
After
O'Neal Cruz.
Yeah, and hopefully he's going to be back and playing soon, but a fractured ankle sucks. So the bullpen's empty, right? Everybody comes out, there's yelling, there's screaming, there's pushing, there's shoving, and Kopech is right at the center of it. And he was able to, through, with the help of Ethan Katz and Pedro Grifol going out right after the whole thing and settled down with a mound visit, to get back into whatever mindset he needed to get into to finish out that inning. I think that's really impressive from a pitcher. Your adrenaline spiked. You're Michael Kopech, and you know you can reach back for 98 anytime you want it, maybe to your own detriment at times, you know? So to be able to control and calm yourself and get a really good start after his first start was a disaster, that's a big step in the right direction. So I hope and expect that Kopech goes out here and makes the next big step, or at least continues on the path that he'd been on. The strikeouts were okay. The walks were a little high. It was a little goofy in and around the strike zone, but the fastball was really good last time against the Pirates, and that's where he lives. You know, that pitch has got to be right for him.
Connor McKnight joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Usually it's Connor McKnight driving the show, but I'm the captain today.
That so you are, sir.
He will be on the call of today's game with Darren Jackson later on. First pitch coming your way at 1:10. So I've been playing a little bit of Recon from yesterday as he met the media before the homestand began. And any takeaways for you that stood out from Recon yesterday?
Yeah, you know, two things. One is, you know, he stressed that, and it may not be fun to have to talk about, injuries never are, but he stressed that injuries are part of this game. Guys get hamstrings. They had been healthy up until the point that Eloy Jimenez had the hamstring strain, and then they very quickly weren't healthy. Personally, Jeff, I don't know how you feel about it, but when baseball has contact injuries, I mean like player contact injuries,
yes,
not player and wall, those are fluke plays.
Yes.
Those are in most cases, those are plays where a player has very little control over what happens next. Right?
There's no amount of training a player can do to avoid
that
injury.
Weirdly, the play where Byron Buxton ran into Lenin Sosa in Minnesota, that is the play where you do need to be a bit more heads up. You are watching the defender. If he was screened, he was screened.
Yes.
We haven't heard him say that one way or the other, but it's very rare where a collision play, a player has anything that he can do differently about it. So I take the Tim Anderson injury and kind of put that in a very different bucket.
I completely agree.
It still affects them the same way, though,
yep.
You know? And I think the other thing I appreciated Rick saying was, we came into this offseason, this spring training, Cactus League, the whole thing, saying, we've got to prove this to you. And he very much understood, and I think this team very much understands, that they have not done that yet. And it has not been the start that they wanted. It is 14 games. There's a lot of baseball left. They have a very tough schedule here in April, believe it or not. This Orioles team is good. I don't know if you've heard, but the Rays are a very good baseball club. And then you got to play them a couple of times here in April, too.
You read my mind, because I was literally going to mention the fact that through 14 games, the Tampa Bay Rays now finally have a defeat after last night. I know that's something you've been tracking a lot in the pregame.
Yeah.
So that was I made note of that for you, just to mention that they actually are beatable.
Any piece of trivia where you get to bring up the St. Louis Maroons from the 1884 season, that's a fun one.
And I enjoyed the way you played it yesterday. I did note the 84 St. Louis Maroons.
Right.
Oh, by the way, 1884.
1884. They played a team, Len knows the history of it. I've looked it up some, and it's still a little confusing to me. They played a team, the Maroons did, the Pittsburgh/Chicago franchise. They played like one game in Pittsburgh and then had to fold up shop because they didn't have it all set and moved to Chicago and played the rest of the games in Chicago in 1884. That's how baseball worked. We'll see what happens.
Now, listen, you're completely forgiven if you have no idea the follow-up question I'm about to ask. I assume they dropped Pittsburgh from their name at that point, or did they keep it?
I don't know, because I haven't seen any of the marketing stuff for game log.
Sure.
But Baseball Reference has them as the Chicago Pittsburgh.
Yes.
You know, but that's Baseball Reference.
Of course. That's wonky. Yeah.
I did hear that, what was the other fun thing I heard? Oh, Jeff Passan tweeted this. Mm-hmm. 1884 was either the year after or 2 years after pitchers were allowed to throw overhand.
Ah, yes.
You know?
That's a significant innovation.
That is increasing the level of difficulty just a touch, isn't it?
Yes, yes, I would say so. Could you imagine if we were alive and all of a sudden the rule changes had been enacted that year? And
unbelievable.
All of a sudden, you think the pitch clock something.
Oh, guys,
we're gonna let these guys throw overhand.
Yeah, Jeff, guys are throwing. Nobody's going to get a hit. You get to throw overhand? What next? You're going to be allowed to bend your elbow? Unbelievable. Can't have it.
Fabulous stuff. All right, Connor, we will be – any last words before I let you go get back to your pregame prep here?
No, I guess I'll have to do more research about the 84 season, the 1884 season.
All right. Well, we will be anxiously awaiting those nuggets later on. That is Connor McKnight here on White Sox Weekly. As always, you can usually catch him on this show, but of course he has play-by-play duties today with Darren Jackson. So he will be with you a little bit later on. Coming your way around 1 o'clock, first pitch again, 1:10 here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Hey, Sox fans. Head to the ballpark on April 29th as the White Sox take on the Tampa Bay Rays at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans will receive a White Sox hockey jersey presented by Guaranteed Rate. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm Jeff Miller here on White Sox Weekly. Up next, let you hear from Pedro Grifol, the White Sox manager. Checked in with Cap and Jay Hood, the flagship station here, ESPN 1000, earlier in the week and had some interesting thoughts. So I'll let you hear what he had to say with the guys coming up here right on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight today, who is on the call with Darren Jackson. First pitch coming your way at 1:10 today as the White Sox take on the Baltimore Orioles at Guaranteed Rate Field. Let's pause 10 seconds for station's ID. As I mentioned earlier, it is certainly a beautiful day out at the ballpark, so if you are looking for something to do, this is the perfect place to be. Come join us here at Guaranteed Rate Field. White Sox Orioles, Michael Kopech taking on Kyle Gibson today as the White Sox look to end their three-game losing streak. Let's try Tracy, who's on the south side, had a question about the White Sox manager. Tracy, you're on White Sox Weekly. What's going on?
How you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
Fine. I want to know, why do he keep taking Berger out, making a switch when Berger is hitting good? If your player is playing good, you don't need a switch.
Yeah, no, I get your concern, Tracy. As I mentioned early in the show, Jake Berger's certainly been somebody who you love to watch hit. And, of course, I think, you know, the score of the game plays a huge role in that situation. With the White Sox up in that at that moment, it was, you know, knowing that he wanted a better matchup for Gavin Sheets there when he pinch hit at the time, and an understanding that he was in all likelihood going to replace Jake Berger with Hanser Roberto for just defensive purposes. And that's something you're going to see most managers do. That's not just a Pedro Grifol thing. That's, you know, when and again, I like Jake Berger a lot as a hitter. He still has a lot to prove as a fielder. And in a situation where you're leading by three runs, you want to give your team the best opportunity to win. And I think the hope was always that you wouldn't need Jake Berger's bat at that point because you'd already established the lead. So I really think that was the thinking and the thought process there, Tracy. It's just an unfortunate situation that the White Sox bullpen was not able to hold the lead yesterday. It really, you know, and until Jake Berger does a little more defensively, and I'll be honest, you know, it's going to take a long time to get to the point where Pedro Grifol is going to leave Jake Berger in the lineup late in games when he's got better alternatives defensively. You know, it's going to take, you know, Jake Berger just, you know, hitting the cover off the ball so much that he feels like I cannot take him out of the lineup. And even still, you know, we've seen Hall of Fame talents in this game and Manny Ramirez still be replaced defensively. So, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock in that situation. I don't think that was by any means a bad managerial call yesterday. It's just the reality of trying to give your team the best opportunity to win. We mentioned Pedro Grifol there. Let's let you hear from Pedro Grifol, who joined Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 earlier this week on Wednesday, and had a lot of interesting things to say. Good to hear from Pedro Grifol, a little more personality-driven as well, a little more than you get from just a pregame show. Here is the White Sox manager with Cap and Jay Hood earlier in the week.
Well, some of it's part of the game, and I don't think any one of them is a shocker, but, you know, one of them, you know, Timmy's was just a mis-executed rundown, you know. So, but, again, you're right, it's part of the game. It's early for it to be part of the game, but we are where we are, and we just got to have that next man up mentality and move forward.
Can you just explain to all of us how should that rundown have been executed to be proper fundamentally?
Well, they actually made the right call on that, because I don't think you would have turned a 5-4-3 double play right there with Michael Taylor running. So, you know, it was a 5-4 and then getting a rundown. And what happened was, you know, Timmy went right where you're supposed to be. And, you know, Alberto, once he once he threw the ball to Andrews at second base, just stayed in that lane where he needed to just veer off that lane and let the rundown happen between Andrews and Timmy, and that's where the ball came to Alberto. Alberto dropped the ball, then he tried to flip it to Timmy, and the runner kind of dove right into Timmy's knee. So it was just an unfortunate situation where Timmy got hurt, in a botched rundown, really.
Pedro, you've been around baseball for a long time, so you know what it looks like when it's right defensively for a ball club. So what is your philosophy overall about working on defense and getting it right?
Well, I mean, we're working. The guys are out there working every single day. We were on a nice little run there defensively in the last few games. We've made some mistakes. These are being addressed. We were out there working yesterday. They'll be out there working today, and it's just one of those things where we gotta address these things, and we gotta go out there and work on them the next day and improve. And that's just a part of it.
Pedro Grifol is the manager of the Chicago White Sox. He joins Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Sitting in the other dugout with Kansas City, what did you notice most about the White Sox as a team?
Well, the one thing I noticed is the one thing that's not happening now is that, last year the energy part of it and the intensity part, was just off and on. And that's the one thing I can tell you. These guys are coming out. They're preparing with intensity and energy, and they're playing hard. These guys are playing hard. They're running hard. They're working hard. They're preparing for a game. We're meeting. We're going over clubs. We're going over the pitching. We're going over all the fundamentals that we need to go over on the opposing club and the things that we can do and can't do. It's a matter of putting it all together now and, getting the pitching and the hitting going at the same time.
Pedro, when did you first start really falling in love with baseball? Because the reason why I ask that question is because I'm sure that your love for baseball, you can impart that to young players. So when did you say, this is the game for me, that I really love the sport?
Well, my dad took me to my first baseball game, with my first baseball practice, when I was 4 years old. Unfortunately for me, I had, two sports that I loved, and I loved baseball and I loved tennis, so I wasn't, one of these kids that just played baseball every single day. I mixed it up a little bit. And then when I had to make a decision right around, I think it was around 12 years old, baseball was obviously the sport that I chose. And, I just love the game. I love everything about it. I love to play it. I love to practice it. And then as my career, in the minor leagues, started to, go in a different direction, then, my mind went to player development, and it went to, teaching and managing and, that type of mentality. So I've loved it probably since I was 4 years old. The good thing is that I was doing something else too. It just wasn't baseball, so I didn't get burned out from it. And then once I got to about 12 years old, it was just strictly baseball. And this is something that I love. I have a passion for it. I never get sick of it. I never get bored from it. this is what I do. I do baseball, and I spend time with my family. This is just the two things that I do in life.
So we're talking to White Sox manager Pedro Grifol here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. What I find interesting is, I think you hit it right. Your club plays hard. There's some talent there. What has been the biggest surprise to you when you move over one seat? Now you're the guy. You're not the bench coach or the first base coach or third. They play vital roles. It's your team now. Wins and losses are on your ledger. What's the biggest surprise you found so far?
The good thing is that my career took me to many different chairs, right? And this chair right here mimics a lot of different chairs that I've gone through in my career, which, the administration part of mimics the farm directing. The managing part in the minor leagues obviously mimics, managing here and managing winter ball. The coordinating part mimics the instruction and all the stuff that goes on the field and leading. And, so there hasn't been really any surprises to this job. You know, the one thing that, that obviously is different is that, you know, you wear it, right? You got to wear it. You're the manager, and you know the club. The club's a reflection, you know, on you and your preparation and your motivation and what you're trying to do on a daily basis and your structure and, you know, everything. So you got to wear it. And that's the one thing that, you know, I go home. I love this game. I love this team. I love this game. I love this organization. I love what I do. You know, so I'm hard on myself. And that's the one thing that I battle with. I don't see it changing. I'm always going to be that way. I just got to, you know, do a better job of, you know, flushing things and getting back here the next day and, you know, and understanding that, you know, today's a good day to start a winning streak, really.
That is White Sox manager Pedro Grifol as he joined Cap and Jay Hood earlier this week on ESPN 1000, the flagship station for the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight today. Connor's got the call with Darren Jackson. Again, White Sox and Orioles game two of this three-game set at Guaranteed Rate Field coming your way with a 110 first pitch today, and I cannot reiterate it enough. It is a gorgeous day here at the ballpark, so head on over and join us today because there's more than one reason. There is a fabulous celebration going on, which I need to share with you. It's going to be a great day to be in the ballpark. It's something I'm sure you're probably aware of, but maybe it slipped your mind. I'll share what it is with you next right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Do, da, dip it in. You can go with this, or you can go with that. You can go with this, or you can go with that. I think you go with this, because this is kind of fat.
Jeff Meller broadcasting live from Guaranteed Rate Field on White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Today is one of the best, might be the best, annual tradition across baseball. And that, of course, for those who may not be aware of the exact date, it is April 15th, which is the day that baseball honors and celebrates what Jackie Robinson did, not just for this sport, but for the country as a whole. April 15th, 1947, the date when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier for the Brooklyn Dodgers and became the first African-American player to play. And what he was able to do, not just as a player, but what he had to endure while playing baseball is, you know, it's unfathomable. It's unimaginable. You know, the racism that he had to deal with while trying to play one of the most difficult sports, you know, hitting a baseball, often argued the most difficult thing to do in sports. And with essentially an entire race on his shoulders, because knowing that he was going to be everything he did was under a microscope, right? So he had to listen to these insults by racist fans who were ignorant and didn't really understand the significance of what they were, the spew and the what they were hurling at him. And for Jackie Robinson to not just play baseball, but have to play at a level that, you know, think about it, basically unparalleled, because what he had to be a great player so that he could change the minds again of those who were ignorant, and to really tap into, you know, the reality of, listen, yes, African American players could compete at the highest level and could also excel at the highest level. And just to think about all of that, and then for the levels that he played at, were unbelievable. Wanted to read you a few quotes from Jackie Robinson, because again, it is one of the best traditions in baseball, as across the league, everybody will be wearing the number 42. It's kind of cool as I look out on the scoreboard, looking at the lineup. You know, I see Michael Kopech up against Kyle Gibson. Kopech, number 42. Kyle Gibson, number 42. When you look at the White Sox lineup, up and down the lineup, number 42 listed against everybody's name. Andrew Benintendi in left field leading off, number 42. In center field, Luis Robert, number 42. Hitting third, Andrew Vaughn, number 42. DHing, Eloy Jimenez, number 42. Doing the catching, hitting fifth, Yasmani Grandal, number 42. Playing third base, Jake Berger, number 42. In right field, Oscar Colas, number 42. Hitting seventh, playing second base, Lenin Sosa, number 42. And hitting ninth, playing shortstop, Elvis Andrus, number 42. So again, everybody will be wearing number 42. All baseball personnel in uniform today will be wearing number 42, honoring Jackie Robinson. Some great quotes from Jackie Robinson. Plenty of times I wanted to haul off when somebody insulted me for the color of my skin, but I had to hold to myself. I knew I was kind of an experiment. The whole thing was bigger than me. I mean, that's just, you know, the maturity at his age to understand what he was embarking upon was, it's just unbelievable. More from Jackie Robinson. A life is not important except in the impact it has on other lives. I'm not concerned with your liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being. Life is not a spectator sport. If you're going to spend your whole life in the grandstand just watching what goes on, in my opinion, you're wasting life. You're wasting your life. I mean, just think about it. The grand context of all that he's saying here, you know, how can it be applied not just to baseball, but the reality of almost anything you do? There's a great lesson to be learned. Again, the great impact that Jackie Robinson made, not just on baseball, but on an entire country. More from Jackie Robinson, some famous quotes from him. There's not an American in this country free until every one of us is free. Again, April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. During my life, I've had a few nightmares which happened to me while I was wide awake. I'm grateful for all the breaks and honors and opportunities I've had, but I always believe I won't have it made until the humblest black kid in the most remote backwoods of America has it made. A couple more from Jackie Robinson here as we commemorate and celebrate Jackie Robinson Day here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Jeff Meller on White Sox Weekly. Many people resented my impatience and honesty, but I never cared about acceptance as much as I cared about respect. Negroes aren't seeking anything which is not good for the nation as well as ourselves. In order for America to be 100% strong, economically, defensively, and morally, we cannot afford the waste of having second and third class citizens. Two more here from Jackie Robinson. Blacks have had to learn to protect themselves by being cynical, but not cynical enough to slam the door on potential opportunities. We go through life walking a tightrope to prevent too much disillusionment. And finally, one more from Jackie Robinson. Above anything else, I hate to lose. And, you know, it just goes to show, amongst all that he was going through and enduring, you know, he was still a competitor. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, there's, and rightfully so, a lot to be made of what he did, what he had to go through, and just the great burden that was his career. But it was also a Hall of Fame career where he was just a fabulous, fabulous player, you know, and, you know, numerous titles with the Dodgers, and was always, you know, generally thought of as their best player for the vast majority of his career. So just a huge, huge impact, again, not just on baseball, but across the country. And it'd be, you know, like I said, if you're just kind of doing nothing on a Saturday and looking for something to do, what better day than on a beautiful Saturday afternoon to come out to Guaranteed Rate Field and enjoy the celebration with us here as everybody dons the number 42 on the field today to celebrate Jackie Robinson. He had a 63.8 career WAR, just a ridiculous total. And again, it's just insane when you consider what he was going through at the time. How about this? An on-base percentage of 410. 410! Ridiculous. 200 career stolen bases, hit 141 home runs, and he had a slugging percentage of 477 and an OPS of 887. OPS plus 133. That one's for Connor McKnight. I know he loves the OPS plus, but yes, just ridiculous, the career achievements by Jackie Robinson. He won the MVP in 1949. He, of course, was Rookie of the Year in 1947. And just was critical in so many ways to the 1955 World Series championship team that the Brooklyn Dodgers won again in 1955. So I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, just going over some of the great career achievements of Jackie Robinson on Jackie Robinson Day. Again, he will be recognized across all of baseball. So just wanted to mention that because it is pretty cool when you look out on the field and you see the players warming up and then checking the scoreboard and seeing number 42 list against everybody's name. A pretty cool sight. So great day to be here and maybe bring the little ones out as well. A White Sox 10-game ticket plan gives you the ultimate flexibility. Pick games based on your schedule and your budget. Don't miss any of the action in 2023. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call 312-674-1000. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network talking with you. If you'd like to jump on, 312-332-3776. Got a little bit of time for you. James Fegan going to join us in about 20 minutes. Connor mentioned his piece in The Athletic earlier in the week, and James always does great work. He's going to join us in about 20 minutes. So if you'd like to hop on board, jump on now because it would be the best time for you while we have a little bit of time. I mentioned Rick Hahn meeting the media yesterday, and a lot of interesting stuff. We've played a little bit for you earlier on today. Want to go through, we talked about Ronaldo Lopez yesterday having, you know, probably his toughest performance of the year, and it came on the heels. It was tough because Lopez has been such a vital piece for the White Sox so far this year, and Rick Hahn actually talked about Ronaldo Lopez handling the closer role before yesterday's game.
I think Ronaldo's been awesome. And we talked about this a little bit in spring, too. Like, he came in with, like, absolutely on a mission. He wanted the ball in that closer role. I think Pedro's gone out of his way to explain to him. I was there in Minnesota when he did once again. Like, hey, you may close the eighth. You may close the seventh. It depends on the game situation. But bring that same mentality every time you go out there. And the stuff's been fantastic. He showed up, you know, raring to go and have taken to some of the adjustments that Ethan and Hass wanted him to make over the last 6-8 months. And I absolutely think he's capable of handling a closer role on a regular basis if that's how someone wants to use him. Yeah, he's been great.
I would concur with that assessment from Rick Hahn. I thought it was interesting. He, you know, mentioned that he believes he could handle the closer role. I think, you know, if you look at the ERA, of course, right now, it's not great. It doesn't look good because he did give up a couple of earned runs. But for the most part, he's been able to come in and do the job. And again, I will say and reiterate that I thought he did do the job yesterday. Unfortunately, it was just a tough play for Elvis Andrews to make. And, you know, again, it would have been a great play by Elvis Andrews. It was a makeable play, but he was not able to come up with it. And that was a moment where Ronaldo Lopez doesn't necessarily handle it the way you would hope, but I'm confident going forward that he will be a guy, a piece in the bullpen that the White Sox can count on going forward. And so hopefully a little bit of adversity early in the season here will lead to maybe some more strength later on in the season as the White Sox look to get back to their winning ways. As I mentioned, Kyle Gibson against Michael Kopech today. Interestingly enough, Kyle Gibson had some very interesting comments earlier in the week when he was asked specifically about a certain celebration by the Baltimore Orioles, and this would be when they're at bat. Some interesting things unfolding that has caught a lot of national media. So we've got the Orioles in town today here at Guaranteed Rate Field. I'll let you hear what Kyle Gibson had to say about that coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight, who has the call of today's game along with Darren Jackson. First pitch at 1:10 today. Pre-game show will start at 12:30. White Sox Weekly up until then. So your opportunity to join us, 312-332-3776. If you'd like to talk some Sox with me for the next hour or so, James Fegan scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes from now. He covers the White Sox for The Athletic, so we'll pick his brain as well about what he's seen from the White Sox 14 games in. Let's head on out to Lyle and say good morning for a few more minutes to Dean. Dean, what's going on? You're on White Sox Weekly.
Hey, Thanks for taking my call so fast. I got to be honest with you. I have lost faith in my man Pedro Grifol, the bench coach from Kansas City. Late game leads, they're invaluable. And you don't put a guy like Diekman, who is not a leverage guy, who is a horrible walk ratio pitcher in a situation like that. There's two leads that this guy has botched. I'm not talking Diekman. I'm talking about Grifol. So I got to say, the honeymoon's over. What are we, 4 or 5 games under 500? Not impressed by this guy. Secondly, I'm tired, and this can sound horrible. I'm tired of guys who play strong and hard for their country, but when it's time to play for their team with a guaranteed contract, hey, I go 1-for-18 in Pittsburgh, and oh, geez, my back hurts. I'm done with this. That's it. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Dean, appreciate your passion. You know, listen, Yoan Moncada was placed on the injured list. If you listen to Pedro Grifol, he spoke about how Moncada basically fought the White Sox tooth and nail. He didn't want to go on the injured list. He clearly is somebody who wants to be out there. And Pedro Grifol, and that's fine, Dean, you can be critical of the manager and some of his choices. I mean, I get it. Not everybody's in love with Jake Diekman's start. It's certainly understandable, but you do also need to rely on, you know, different arms in the bullpen at times. And, you know, I think, you know, with a 3-run lead, my guess is that Pedro probably thought that it was an opportunity where he might be able to, you know, even if Diekman didn't have his best stuff, which he clearly didn't, he might be able to squeeze an inning of work out of him. That was, I think, the hope, because that way he might not have had to have turned to Ronaldo Lopez when he did. That's the reality of baseball as a manager, is it's not always about that night's game. You know, everything going into it is about managing your bullpen and navigating it through, you know, not just a 162 game season, but also the realities of, you know, a series, right? And understanding, you know, when you have days off coming and what you're trying to do, and understanding too that pitchers need work, right? Like Diekman, you know, there's an opportunity with the lead to get him some action. And if you can get an inning out of him yesterday and maybe get him feeling some confidence, all of a sudden, maybe you feel better about turning to him in the next start. Maybe he feels better about that. That's the reality of the situation. So I think you can never just say you can't turn to that pitcher. If he's in your bullpen, at some point you're probably going to need, and I get it. You know, you don't think of him as a high leverage arm, and I get that, but it also doesn't help the situation that, you know, as Connor mentioned earlier in the show, Joe Kelly is on the injured list right now. And obviously we know about Liam Hendricks not being available. So when you're already missing two significant arms from your pen, you know, every manager is going to be tasked with, you know, the reality that they're going to have to find opportunities to use different arms in their bullpen. And so it didn't work out last night. And, you know, he didn't, it's not like he gave Jake Diekman a long leash, right? As soon as he sensed the moment was Diekman didn't have it and he needed to turn elsewhere, he did. And again, I think Ronaldo Lopez did a pretty decent job of almost getting them out of that jam. So, you know, it's not ideal. It's always going to be more difficult to listen to the explanation from a manager after a game that they've lost, especially in a game where they've blown a lead. So I get it. You know, but to get back to the Yoan Moncada criticism, I mean, again, he wants to be out there. He clearly, in the last couple games over the weekend against the Pirates, Pedro Grifol noted he was not having success. Clearly, the back was affecting his swing, and so they weren't going to just keep trotting him out there. I think you saw, based on them not immediately putting him on the injured list, they wanted to give it a couple days to see how it would respond. And if it responded okay, well, then they would not have placed him on the injured list. But clearly, it's one of those things where it's just crazy to me, on the heels of talking about Jackie Robinson in the previous segment, I then have to combat people who want to say a player is playing harder for his country than his team. I mean, I don't believe that. That's not the reality. These guys are all professional athletes who have a lot of pride in what they do. And just because they show a lot of passion when they're playing in the World Baseball Classic doesn't mean that they're any less passionate about the game when they're playing for their teammates and the organization that pays them. So I'm just not going to buy that, Dean. Sorry, you can feel free to have your opinion, but I vehemently disagree about that. I mentioned Kyle Gibson, the Baltimore Orioles starting pitcher today, had a very funny comment when he was asked specifically about the Baltimore Orioles celebration. And I should give some context for those who may not be aware. There is a funnel. Anytime an Orioles player homers, they will use the funnel and they will chug water after the home run. And this had been affectionately termed the dong bong. And apparently, that is not necessarily the way the Baltimore Orioles want it to be classified. Kyle Gibson addressed this earlier in the week.
So if I'm the first person you've asked, we want to make sure that it's rebranded a little bit. It's a homer hose, not a dong bong. So it's a homer hose. Just like as a kid, you go out back, you take a drink from the water hose after you play outside playing wiffle ball. So we've got a turn the water faucet on celebration when you hit a single. We've got a sprinkler when you hit an extra base hit. And then it's a homer hose when you hit a homer. So just so you guys, we know that we get that straight.
Did you ever think you'd say dong bong?
No, never. Did not have that on the bingo card.
So there you go. Kyle Gibson, today's starter for the Baltimore Orioles against the White Sox today here at Guaranteed Rate Field, addressing the Baltimore Orioles home run celebration. And not just the home run celebration, but they're very elaborate. As you heard, if it's a single, the player will look at the dugout and then turn the knobs like he's turning the faucet on. And then for an extra base hit, a double or a triple, they then go ahead and mimic a sprinkler. It's the old school sprinkler where the dance move where you go back and forth slowly. And I immediately thought of, I believe it was Knocked Up, the film Knocked Up, Judd Apatow's classic comedy in the mid-2000s, where I think Seth Rogen's character was using the sprinkler and the dice roll on the dance floor quite significantly. Well, the Orioles have adopted the sprinkler for any double or triple. And then if, as the player, the one who actually got the hit, mimics the actual sprinkler motion, then all his teammates in the dugout will then spit water out onto the field. So that is amusing. And then finally, of course, well, I guess we're going with homer hose, Brendan. I look over at Brendan Riley over my shoulder, our executive producer of White Sox Baseball. And so homer hose, if you actually hit the homer. Hopefully, we won't have to see any of that until after the Orioles get out of town here. But in case it does happen, just preparation, you can look for that in the dugout. That's something that is always, amusing. And, it's crazy to me. Think about it. We're doing homer hoses here in 2023. And it's just a great feeling because think of how far we've come since, the pandemic in 2020 when I'll be honest, I wasn't sure we were ever going to shake hands again. And now we're back to playing baseball in front of fans, and we're celebrating home runs with homer hoses. And so it's just, I love it. It's just a good feeling. It makes you feel good about baseball again. So, come on, check it out. Join us here at the ballpark today. Maybe you'll get a chance. Again, hopefully not, but in the event that the Orioles do homer today, you can see it in person. The homer hose take effect. Hey, join us for Southside Mondays presented by United Airlines. Every Monday home game, watch your White Sox rep the Southside jerseys and honor small business making an impact on the Southside. Each specially priced ticket includes $20 in concession credit. All fans receive 20% off Southside jerseys. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/Mondays. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, again in for Connor McKnight, who has the call of today's action with Darren Jackson. Again, the first pitch coming your way at 1:10. Up next, we'll check in with James Fegan, who covers the White Sox for The Athletic, right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller, filling in for Connor McKnight, who's got your call of today's game with Darren Jackson, and it's my pleasure now to be joined here at Guaranteed Rate Field by the Athletic beat reporter for the White Sox, James Fegan. Does great work, and I will always encourage folks, if you are not a subscriber to the Athletic, if you're a Sox fan, I think James Fegan's coverage is well worth, what's it? You can usually find it for a dollar a month. There's usually a deal going on.
There's always some promotion going on that I am not properly versed on.
But you can find it. They're definitely out there. So if you're not checking out James's work on The Athletic, you're certainly missing out. All right, James, yesterday was a tough loss for the White Sox. I thought it was probably the toughest loss of the year, considering they were leading that one and the bullpen wasn't able to come through. What was your assessment of last night's game?
I mean, sure, it's a candidate for toughest loss. Yeah, it's a situation where it was basically queued up the way they'd want to. We just put out an article yesterday about how Ronaldo Lopez had emerged as the guy that they want in every key situation, and they had him in that a little bit. Obviously, they were hoping that Jake Diekman gets to that inning clean. They found like some lefty-lefty matchups for him, but instead, he kind of has two runners on. He's dealing with some control issues. But you still feel good. You have a situation where Ronaldo Lopez basically gets a weak grounder that could have been the third out, but it's almost just too weak. And
yes.
Elvis Andrus didn't have a play, and then he loses a little focus from there, walks Cedric Mullins on four pitches to force him to run, and brings in the matchup you didn't want to face Adley Rutschman. And even then has him 0-2 and a fastball, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, tails back over the plate. We were talking to Pedro today. Ronaldo was going to be out there to get four outs, and they're going to queue it up for Graven for a save, and obviously that's not what happened. I mean, in some respects, it's a little bit like you went out on your shield. It's your best reliever. You put him out there in a situation, it just didn't happen, and that's going to happen, hopefully less than five times over the course of a season, but for a team that's really been needing some sort of turnaround, needing for things to come together, it seemed like a well-played, sharp game up to that point, and it, erodes on them, and now you're looking at 5-9 and five games back from the Twins already at this point in the year.
Yeah, well, let's not look at the standings too closely because it looks like a daunting task already. But you mentioned, talking with Pedro Grifol there. What are your initial thoughts now, 14 games in, about how he's handling his inaugural year as a manager?
I mean, he's very cool. He's level-headed. Everybody talks about things being communicated straight to the point. It's just that the manager is not a cure-all. You still have to execute. Still, it's no substitute for hitting lots of homers and getting on base a ton. It's not going to make the bullpen healthier just by osmosis. So there's still difficulties. There's still the injuries that they're dealing with is not something that can be dealt with just the fact that Pedro communicates everything clearly or has a clear idea of what he wants. There's still an execution side of it. There's still a player side of it that needs to come together. And I haven't I'm not out on him now because they started 5-9, but you also haven't seen necessarily the totally revamped, after the rough defensive series they had in Minneapolis, you haven't necessarily, if you're unconvinced that there was a new brand of baseball coming from the White Sox this year after the way they looked last year, you haven't seen enough to be like, oh, I'm on board. They've totally changed everything yet. And it seems like it's going to take time or it's going to be a process if it's going to work out.
James Fegan covers the White Sox for The Athletic. Joining me here on White Sox Weekly, Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight. Michael Kopech on the mound today. You mentioned you had a chance to chat with him a little bit in Minnesota. Clearly, he could definitely, he bounced back from the first start nicely, but the White Sox weren't able to give him any run support. How do you think he's feeling right now early in the season?
Well, all throughout spring, it looked a little disjointed. And after his first spring outing, I think his velo was kind of consistently down. He's in the low 90s. And he said, I know it'll be there when I need it, which is sounds good if you can trust it. But also, there's no pitcher whose velo has been down in spring, and he said, oh man, I don't know what's going on. So
dead arm. It's always the dead arm.
Until the proof is there, it's hard to take that as word. But he was consistently 97, 98 all throughout his outing in Pittsburgh, even deep into the game. Whereas he had kind of, maybe come out really hot in some games in spring and then wavered over the course of as he got fatigued. So he said it was some things mechanically that he really felt he was getting onto his front side of his legs and his delivery a lot better. And that, the proof was there. The stuff was pretty crisp. And, obviously he's worked a ton on his slider. He's worked a ton on his curveball. But, the difference between Michael Kopech being able to overpower people with his fastball and how much that sets everything up is undeniable. I know he wants to be a complete pitcher and he's done a lot into it, but what makes him special is obviously the power and the you know the spin rate that he has on that. So when that's popping, like it's not just a guy getting by, it's a difference making starter. So if that's a mechanical fix that he can stay kind of set in long term, then yeah, that's obviously a plus contributor rotation. They need it. They need everything clicking at the same time because they haven't had that thus far this year.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn met the media yesterday before the game, and he mentioned both Liam Hendricks and Garrett Crochet, gave a little bit of an update on their current injury situations. Now, he didn't want to put a timeline on either guy, rightfully so, until he actually sees them get out there and do some work. But I would say it sounded a bit encouraging hearing the general manager talk about two key pieces that will certainly help the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean... out of spring, at least, the expectation for Garrett was mid-May. It's not as specific yet because he hasn't headed out on a rehab stint to Charlotte, but he's pitched a couple games and extended, and obviously everyone has seen him throw in spring and has been impressed by what he's doing. He's working on a four-pitch mix now, which is the sort of thing when you have Tommy John, you end up working on all your pitches. And maybe he won't be as much a fastball slider as he was, but Garrett... One way to put it is that he looks great physically. I would put it as he looks terrifying because he's 6'6" and he's jacked.
Sure.
So it looks like, especially with the work he's done with the mechanics, that maybe you could hope for him to be kind of the guy he was in 2020 when he comes back who could really touch triple digits. But the thing, talking to relievers, is like, hey, we got to deal with what we got. We got to win games right now. We have to be, we're really confident in the 8 dudes we have. Keenan Middleton came up in Minneapolis and looked great, for example. But these are two guys that they think are some could be, Liam has been the last 4 years, some of the best relievers in baseball, and they could add it to a unit that's obviously underperformed so far this year. And Jimmy Lambert said as much when I talked to him this morning that this unit is underperformed. I think they can be better, but obviously with the ERA, some of the things they piled up in the season, at this point it's been a weak point, and they feel like they got two big additions coming. And as unbelievable as it sounds, as much as like there's still hurdles for Liam to clear, like he's not on the 60-day IL for the reason, because they think he can be back somewhat soon. And, beyond the fact that it's being incredible, inspiring, yeah. How is he pulling off physically? That's a guy who's won reliever of the year and earned it multiple times in the last couple of years. Adding that guy to the bullpen, having Ronaldo Lopez being more flexible, not just the guy to get every big out in the game, that'd be a big lift.
Well, you're so right. He's absolutely a fireman in the bullpen there, and somebody who just, it's not only that, like just, the leadership that he provides, inside the clubhouse as well is undeniable. So it'd certainly be great to get him back. I mean, I think anybody would have said, as the season started, hey, if Liam Hendricks comes back at all at any point this season, that would be phenomenal. But just, the fact that they're even discussing the idea that he could be back sooner rather than later, or intimating it, is very, very cool, I would say, for folks out there. You mentioned, though, interesting there, Crochet working on four different pitches. Has the ship set sail on him ever being a starter? Do you think he's basically locked into the pen, or do you think there's a possibility down the road in a couple of years they could entertain that notion?
I think it's going to be really hard. It's certainly not going to happen, this year. And I think the team needs are kind of shifting. Well, I could go two ways about that. Obviously, he's such an immediate force in the bullpen. Do you want to go through this process that could involve some struggles for him starting, and the fact that he didn't do in the minors at all, which, differentiated him a little bit from Kopech, kind of that hybrid year of building up to it.
Yep.
But, yeah, you're talking, Giolito and Clevinger are free agents after this year. Lance Lynn is a team option. It's not like there's no need in the rotation to develop in long term. I just think it's going to be really tricky with the years he has left until free agency, or the immediate needs of the immediate team that wants to contend right away. Do you take away somebody who's such a weapon in the bullpen potentially to maybe develop them? And does that involve going back to the minors? Does it involve, some degree of struggle for someone who hasn't really started really since – not even his junior year of college, even farther back from that. He kind of acknowledged that, he didn't, his junior season was a COVID year. His longest outing was like 3 2/3. It's been a really long time. So I think it'd be really difficult, but if he's dominant, if he's showing you four pitches, if he's throwing strikes, then yeah, maybe it's a conversation he can start again with his performance.
Yeah. I just, I hadn't really thought about it, but you mentioned four pitches. So that's the one thing that popped in my head. I wonder, James Fagan of The Athletic covers the White Sox for them here on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight today. All right, so any thoughts? I was mentioning earlier Jackie Robinson Day. Just do you have any thought? I mean, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, so I apologize for that. But, you know, I have to say, like, it is pretty cool just to walk in and still, like, understand the significance of Jackie Robinson Day here at the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. I wish that, you know, I had a friend who had a pretty good idea, I thought, to expand it beyond what they're doing to talk about, you know, the guys who integrated every team. It'd be great to do something about recognizing Minnie Minoso's role in integrating this franchise, or, you know, have mm-hmm. Cleveland talk about Larry Doby, and, you know, really kind of build off of what the momentum is from here, from having this be a thing that players embrace every year, to, you know, diving deeper into the history of, you know, both the integration of teams, but also the Negro Leagues that came before that. I think it can be a starting point that I'd love to see the league build on.
No doubt about it. Great stuff, James. Appreciate you popping into the booth here. Again, he's James Fagan. You can read him on The Athletic, and if you're not, you're missing out. Great Sox coverage there. I'm Jeff Meller. Again, this is the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Quickly, Sox Crawl is back. Join us April 29th for a pregame Whiskey Q Sox Crawl presented by Jack Daniels. Enjoy an exclusive barbecue menu, specialty cocktails from Jack Daniels, and receive a White Sox hockey jersey presented by Guaranteed Rate. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxCrawl. Again, this is ESPN 1000, Hard Rock Casino, White Sox Network.
Here we go, yo! Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Jeff Meller, in for Connor McKnight today, who will be on the call with Darren Jackson as the White Sox host the Baltimore Orioles today here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Let's pause 10 seconds for station's identification.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
This is WMVP WSHE-HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
As I mentioned earlier, it is a beautiful day here out at the ballpark. We are about an hour and 10 minutes away from first pitch. So if you're looking for something to do and you're in the area, swing on by, because it is an absolutely gorgeous day for baseball. We've got Jackie Robinson Day here at the ballpark on a Saturday. What could be better? Michael Kopech taking on Kyle Gibson. So great reason to be out here at Guaranteed Rate today. Come on out and join us. And hey, if you're still looking to select your perfect seats for the 2023 season, join us at Guaranteed Rate Field for our spring open house on Saturday, April 22nd. That's next Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Freely walk around the ballpark and find the best seat and ticket plan that fits your schedule and budget. To sign up, visit whitesox.com/openhouse. All right, White Sox general manager Rick Hahn met the media yesterday, and as I was just talking with James Fagan of The Athletic about, he gave us an update regarding both Garrett Crochet and Liam Hendricks.
What is Crochet throwing in?
He appeared. It's either in two or three games, one or the other. But so he's progressing nicely. Again, it's similar to with Liam. I really won't be able to tell you the time frame until we put him on a rehab assignment. But in both players' instances, we remain optimistic that we'll be able to do that by the end of this month or early next month.
The Crochet, how many pitches is he throwing? Do you know? He's bouncing back nicely from what he's doing?
No issues. He's hitting every milestone. Again, TJ's actually a little easier for me to talk about, because we do have fairly specific milestones. Right. And you start with an end date or sort of an end goal. With his situation will be, we're going to activate him in Chicago after he's available to do multiple inning outings and he's able to do back-to-backs, and we have a calendar all laid out going back to January with what gets us there. And so far, he's hit each milestone.
Is Liam in Glendale?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if right now. He's
working.
Right
now.
I don't know if we talked to you since he rang the bell. I mean, what did that? We talked to a number of people who talked about how much it meant to the organization. And
look, it's, you get caught up in the competitiveness, you get caught up in the slow start or injuries or whatever, you know, you can always find something to be a little frustrated or disappointed about in this game, if you let it. But with Liam, you know, he's helped, I think, all of us sort of take a broader view about what's important on a day-to-day basis. And at the same time, we've seen him not lose an ounce of his competitiveness, whether it's been a battle against cancer or a battle to get back to his previous form and rejoin us. So I think he's been able to provide us all with a healthy dose of perspective as well as, provide inspiration. So looking forward to having him back.
I think all White Sox fans are looking forward to the day when Liam Hendricks can actually come out of that bullpen again. Again, not just because of the great, courageous human story, but, also because he is such a vital part of that bullpen. Your closer, he's been locked down. Everything you could have hoped for and more as not just a closer, but as a leader for the team. And, 38 and 37 saves for the White Sox the first two seasons of this contract here. He's been an all-star both years, and just, a guy you can count on for, the occasional, the 4 or 5 outs when you need him. So, everything too, like a little bit about yesterday's loss, getting back to where they're at. Pedro Grifol has to, when the White Sox were setting up the roster, clearly it's one of those things where you never think, okay, this is going to be an issue. You don't think, okay, one of our players is going to, have to deal with cancer. And so, what the White Sox have, that news that they got, and, I believe it was early November, was tough to deal with. And, of course, everyone's, rooting like hell for Liam Hendricks, and clearly, as you heard in that soundbite, he rang the bell signifying that he's cancer-free, having gone through the treatment. So extraordinary news. Now he just needs to get his strength back and get on that throwing regimen, and, cannot wait to see him back in that bullpen, because having him there, everything really does kind of fall in line behind him when you've got that absolute lockdown closer that Liam Hendricks is. And, you also heard, Garrett Crochet coming back from Tommy John surgery. So that's somebody who, that's that elite weapon out of the pen, the left-hander, a seventh or eighth inning guy. Whenever you've got a difficult lefty in the lineup, you can turn to him. So, they've dealt with some significant injuries. And then, of course, Joe Kelly this year on the injured list. So, the bullpen, which was a strength, at times, is dealing with some injuries. So that's been tough for Pedro Grifol to have to navigate here in the early goings. So, once the White Sox can get some health back, they certainly will be a better team. And hopefully, they can just rely on the depth they have here and get some wins going in the right direction. Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, also talked specifically about not drawing too many big conclusions from a small sample size.
It's really dangerous to take broad conclusions from one game or three games at any stretch of the year, whether it's in April when things tend to get magnified or, even mid-June. Like, any three-game stretch, frankly, even any 13-game stretch is not necessarily indicative of the other 159 or 149 games, whatever the math is there. Good on my feet, right? That's it. Every team wants to get off to a good start. We're disappointed in how the start has gone thus far. There's been times where the starting pitching was probably the culprit for keeping us out of games. There's been times when it's been the bullpen. Both of those two certainly stepped up over the week in Minnesota. So it's just really a matter of getting each element clicking at the same time. I think the simpler way of explaining it is we know we have something to prove, and we know we have to prove it.
So, and think about it. I mentioned, some of those key injuries in the bullpen. Of course, we didn't even hit on all the key hitters who have been in and out of the lineup for the White Sox this year. Of course, Tim Anderson right now. And I will add some encouraging news. Rick did mention that they're hopeful that Tim Anderson will be able to return from the injured list on the earlier side of that initial 2 to 4 week timeline. He's hoping that it'll be much closer to 2 weeks than four. So that is some encouraging news if the White Sox could get their that heartbeat back at shortstop, the top of the order starter that Tim Anderson is. If he comes back sooner rather than later, that certainly will be some good news. Of course, they got Aloy back yesterday, designated hitter. we do expect that Aloy will probably be DHing a little more here on the in the early going as he tries to get back to full health. And of course, I think that is certainly the prudent way of approaching it, to keep him at DH because his bat is so vital. He's hitting cleanup today. That's certainly somebody who's good to have back in the lineup. And then hopefully Yoan Moncada's stay on the injured list won't be more than 10 days. They're just hoping to, I heard Pedro Grifol say yesterday, they're hoping just to kind of nip it in the bud here early and get him back and out there back to full health, especially because he's been somebody who, due to the new rules, the new shift rules, where you're only allowed to have two fielders on either side of the base, he has absolutely benefited early on when he's hitting left-handed because, you know, he has traditionally been somebody who, when he's up there hitting left-handed, you know, he hits a lot of balls into those traditional shifts that we've seen proliferate the majors over the last decade or so. And early on, I know Jason Stark had a stat in his column in The Athletic. I believe he had four hits early on as a left-hander, essentially, that would have been taken away by the shift last season. And that's something that, Yoan Moncada has definitely looked like, at least in the early on, benefited from the new rules. So it would be good to get him back out there early as well. Rick Hahn was pressed, though, by the media asking, okay, so the White Sox talked a lot about, you know, kind of changing things up here in terms of health and how they were approaching things with their players and how they thought they had a good plan in place to be healthier this year. And, of course, when you're dealing with some injuries in the early going, Rick Hahn was pressed and asked, okay, so do you still stand by all the changes that you've made?
Am I going to let 13 days dictate our feelings on the changes we've made? Absolutely not. The level of preparation, analysis, professionalism, everything that has gone into player performance has been impressive and remains strong. I sat here, I think it was your fault actually, at the last time we sat here together when we wanted, not to get, when we wanted to talk about, check your comments, it'll be one of you. when we were talking about player health and availability and how great of a start we had and how great it is to have that core together. And I think you might have, to your credit, even said, I don't want to tempt the baseball guys, which you did. So that was a week ago, right? Maybe 10 days ago when we had that conversation. So we didn't go from like doing a really great job keeping everyone healthy into horse in 10 days. Like, it's a larger process. And as I said that day, unfortunately, I think I was right by like 5 hours. I said, somebody is going to pull a hamstring at some point this year. This is professional sports. This happens. If you look around the game, there are guys getting hurt left and right just from normal course of competing this much early in the season. March and April tend to be the cruelest months when it comes to injuries as you ramp guys up. Again, we want to do better. We're far, far, far from satisfied, but are we confident that we're doing the right thing? We're on the right path? Yes.
So there you go. Nothing to overreact to. Again, early baseball, especially in March and April, oftentimes that's when you will see some of the most injuries, you know, not just by the White Sox, but across all of baseball, as players are getting back into their baseball condition, playing shape, trying to get back out there and used to the routine. And you will see, you know, muscle pulls more often in the early going, especially too when you're dealing with cooler weather. Of course, right now it's not cooler. It's beautiful out at the ballpark here at Guaranteed Rate Field. So, again, if you're looking for something to do, you got a little bit of time, get on over here. Join us for Jackie Robinson Day. It is fabulous. It's a perfect day to watch some White Sox baseball as they host the Orioles for the second of this three-game set. Hey, students, it's easier than ever to get your friends together for a White Sox game. Sign up for Student Steals Alerts and get exclusive access to lower-level ticket offers starting at just $9. For more information, visit whitesox.com/student or text student to 244-769. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Connor McKnight has the call with Darren Jackson coming your way. First pitch at 1:10. This is the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Wrapping things up here on White Sox Weekly. Again, you can catch White Sox Weekly every Saturday during the White Sox season, 2 hours. And then, of course, in the offseason, you get an hour of White Sox Weekly. But 2 hours every Saturday during the season 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. That will be coming your way in about 10 minutes as we get you set for the second of this three-game set. White Sox hosting the Orioles here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Again, absolutely fabulous, beautiful day. Cannot wait to get out onto the concourse and grab myself a dog with some onions. That's the beautiful thing about being here at the ballpark, along with watching some baseball. Again, I'm Jeff Meller in for Connor McKnight. Connor's got the call along with Darren Jackson today. Again, first pitch coming your way at 1:10. Hey, Sox fans and school teachers, join us May 4th for Weather Day presented by the NBC5 Storm Team before the White Sox take on the Twins at 1:10 p.m. Learn how weather impacts baseball and what it means to be a meteorologist with the NBC5 Storm Team. Enjoy demonstrations, trivia, southpaw, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/weather. All right, I wanted to bring this to you because I thought it was very cool, interesting. In the booth yesterday, if you missed it early in the game, Len and DJ, of course, were on the call, and they had a special guest, none other than the Chicago Bears' newest wide receiver, DJ Moore, the man who was a critical piece in the move that Ryan Poles made, trading the first overall pick. He demanded that DJ Moore be involved when he traded with the Carolina Panthers because, of course, DJ Moore hopefully will be a critical piece to Justin Fields' development. And the newest Bears wide receiver joined Len and DJ in the booth yesterday, and he mentioned about how he knew he had some fans around the country, but he was a little taken aback when he learned that he had been traded to the Bears.
Yeah, I noticed that when the whole trade happened, social media was going crazy. So when I seen a whole bunch of Chicago fans already, I was so excited. And when I got here, it even, like, doubled.
Yeah, no surprise there, DJ. Bears fans want a good wide receiver, and he certainly is that. More from DJ Moore with Len and DJ in the booth yesterday. He was... Len pressed him a little bit on, you know, some of his favorite playing services.
How many games at Soldier Field have you played?
None.
You haven't played any? Okay. I think you'll love it. You'll love the way the fans are into it there. And you're used to playing outside on the natural grass. No issues.
Maybe not in the same cold, but,
no,
you know.
No, I'm good with the cold. The cold's not going to bother
me.
Good. Yeah, so I should be good.
Again, I don't want to get you in any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with the turf? Because I've heard some of the artificial turf, some guys have kind of complained in certain stadiums. Does it matter to you what surface you play on?
No, not really. We got to go out there and do a job at the end of the day. Some people say turf hurts people, but grass hurt people the same way. So, I don't know. Just go out there and get the job done.
Again, DJ Moore, the newest wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, joining Len Casper and Darren Jackson yesterday in the booth. One more interesting nugget from DJ Moore. He was asked about who is the best wide receiver, in his opinion, in the National Football League.
The best wide receiver in the league right now, I give it to Stephon Diggs. Stay with the Maryland Terps, so I'm looking for Stephon.
All right. Well, when we get him in the booth, he's going to say DJ Moore.
There we go.
He better.
Love to hear that. Some support for your fellow Maryland Terrapins. DJ Moore, you know what? Maybe with a good year for the Bears, he could maybe lay claim to one of the best wide receivers in football. I think if he does what he did in Carolina, he will have a growing fan base that will certainly stand for him and stump for him being one of the best wide receivers in football if he can produce the way Bears fans hope. Again, just a great reason why you should always be listening to the White Sox games, because you never know who's going to pop in the booth and give you a little bit of a surprise. It was very cool to hear DJ Moore joining Len Casper and Darren Jackson yesterday during the first of the White Sox-Baltimore Orioles series here. Again, game two today of this three-game set. Michael Kopech on the mound against Kyle Gibson today. Gibson's been pretty good this year, providing quality starts when he goes to the mound for the Orioles. So he's certainly somebody who is a serviceable veteran who the White Sox are very familiar with from his days with the Minnesota Twins. So certainly a familiar opponent today on the hill for the Orioles against the White Sox. We will hopefully get to see the White Sox put up a few more runs than yesterday, of course, losing their third straight to the Baltimore, I'm sorry, their third straight of the, right now of the season to the Baltimore Orioles yesterday, 6-3. Hopefully the White Sox can get back to the winning ways here on Jackie Robinson Day. They are out there watering the infield right now, getting things set for the game again. 1:10 first pitch coming your way. We'll have the pregame coverage starting up in a little over 5 minutes from now. Again, Jackie Robinson Day, and if you missed it earlier, Andrew Benintendi is going to be doing the leading off in left field, as he has been so far since Tim Anderson's been out for the most part. Luis Robert hitting second in center field. Batting third will be Andrew Vaughn playing first. Eloy Jimenez made his return to the lineup yesterday. He'll be DHing and hitting cleanup yet again. Hitting fifth, doing the catching today, Yasmani Grandal. Jake Berger back in the lineup after a home run yesterday. He'll be hitting sixth for the White Sox. Again, interesting, well, not interesting, interesting to me, but if you're unaware and you didn't know this by now, everybody is still wearing number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson. So I love that about today. Just looking around the field, everybody sprinkled with 42 out there is always cool. Hitting seventh, playing right field, will be Oscar Colas. Hitting eighth, playing second base, Lenin Sosa. Had a really nice defensive play yesterday, if you missed it as well. And then, unfortunately, then there was a moment later in the game when he actually, you know, wish he would have been a little more alert and looking for the cutoff throw later in the game. I don't think it ended up costing the White Sox, but, you know, he still made a great play in foul territory where he was able to prevent the run from scoring. So I'm happy and kind of excited to see Lenin Sosa. I guess that's the one upside with Tim Anderson, if you want to look at the, you know, the bright spot here of Tim Anderson being out for a little bit, Lenin Sosa getting a little bit of action, because I he's somebody who I think has a bright future. So having an opportunity to see him play on a regular basis, I think, is a good thing. He again will hit eighth today. And then rounding out the lineup will be Elvis Andrews playing shortstop and batting ninth for the White Sox today, with Michael Kopech on the mound as he looks to bounce back and get a win finally. Again, he pitched well against the Pirates last Sunday, but there was no support for him, so it'd be nice if to steal Connor's little tripod method from earlier in the show, if the White Sox can finally get all three phases working together, the lineup, the pitching, and the bullpen, or maybe just two of the three at the very least, and that way they can go ahead and end this three-game skid. That would be excellent. Want to say thanks to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, hanging out with me here in the booth today, and of course Jake Cantu, who's back at the studio at ESPN 1000 for getting all our stuff ready to go today. A lot of great sound we played for you. Heard from Mike Clevenger, Rick Hahn quite a bit. We let you hear from the White Sox manager, Pedro Grifol, as well, who joined Cap and J-Hood earlier in the week. So hope you had a blast. If you missed any of it, don't forget you can always get White Sox Weekly on the ESPN Chicago app in podcast form. All right, thanks to my guests, Connor McKnight and James Fegan, as well, for joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Going to come back at you with the White Sox pregame show coming your way at 12:30. Again, first pitch between the White Sox and Orioles is at 1:10. Keep it here, right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.